Hello, everyone. Okay, mic is working. Good. So, there we have the screen. So, I wasn't prepared for being like on a big stage. I expected to be like on a small stage with like, I don't know, 30 people or something. So, I basically prepared the talk on the train coming here. Yesterday, when I saw this is going to be my stage, I did polish it a little bit or try to, but we'll see how this goes. I'm going to start a little bit with talking about me. Who the fuck am I? In 2011, I think, I gave my name, the Nick Zweifeln. It is German, it means to doubt. Back at the time, I was like studying philosophy and found it very interesting and good, and doubting, I still feel like it's an important thing to do in general. And so it became kind of like my Nick in chaos or like the hacker scene environment. And I've been around the hacker scene for a while. Like my first Chaos Communication Congress by the CCC was like in 2010. However, there was like a time that I wasn't very active at the hacker scene. I was like busy with like other things and it was kind of like a little bit moving away. And then I kind of like came back to the hacker scene and was kind of like, oh, that changed a lot of things. And what I noticed the most was it got really fucking queer. I was like, beforehand, I knew that to some degree, but it wasn't really visible. And so for a while, I've been thinking to get a little bit into it. I did study for like 2 semesters computer science and math, so I do some nerdy things, but ultimately, I'm more like of the talking things, so like a degree in culture studies, and well, I studied philosophy and some other topics. And with like culture studies, as with most of these talking study topics, I find it important to say that there's often like not a very strict right and wrong, or like very strict, this is how it goes. In math, you usually have that, like, well, there's an equation and like you have a proper solution. In all these kind of culture studies, you basically talk about people and people have like very different impressions and different ideas, values. So maybe some of you will not agree with what I'm saying, and this is part of the whole thing. So it is more like a debate, or like I'm trying to do that. And make sure sometimes you can't have like very strict and very clear answers because people are messy and chaotic, and that is a good thing. So let's come to, oh, also, well, yes, I'm pretty gay. I am talking a little bit like from my perspective. That is also like one of the things in culture studies that we often do is that you kind of like make sure from like what perspective you're talking, because everything I'm talking is like kind of like flavored in my own experience, and some people have different experiences, and that is okay and important to acknowledge, I believe. So let's start with like some definitions. What the fuck is a hacker? There's like sure like the information security thing and like the computer science stuff. For me, the most important thing about hackers is that like they're investigating systems. Like they think or like they try to think in a, like a bigger picture. Like how can you penetrate something? Like how can you figure something out? How do you develop something? And the big important thing is. For me, it's like both the investigating part, but also like the systematic part. Like, how do you test things systematically? They're like a little bit experts on finding weak points. Like, how can you penetrate a system? Like, how can you get in? Like, what is broken? And there's, to quite some degree, also like the approach of particularly hacker scenes like these. I would say there's like a big focus on improving things and fixing them. Kind of like what is broken in whatever systems, like, okay, how can we fix it? Like, how can we make it good? And yeah, I am a bit focusing on the systems. We come to that a little in a minute. And one thing that I did notice, or like that is, I guess, very clear to a lot of people, this scene is like, has like a lot of neurodiversity, like a lot of ADHD people, a lot of people with autism, with whatever diagnosis you can have, we have a lot of them here. And the science is not very clear on this, as much as I understood, and I'm like, I'm not a biologist, or like not an, I don't know, medical expert on that point, but neurodiversity correlates quite strongly with queerness. Not necessarily, like there is, like the science is like not really clear why, but we see a lot of correlation between this. And the scene, like the hacker scene altogether, is like, well, it is full of outcasts. That is very much known, I guess, to everyone here. I don't think this is news for everyone. And it's like not really interesting that like special interest folks are like around here because, well, this is what we are. And then we come to queers. Who the fuck are queers? The easy answer is like, well, they're like not cis-hetero. For people who do not know what cis means, it's like the opposite of trans, which means like, well, you're assigned the gender at birth and you still are the same. The opposite is trans, and then it gets a little bit blurry with whether non-binary people are like trans and everything, but queers are basically the opposite. That is like one definition. And it's kind of like the umbrella term for like, well, all the lesbians and gays and non-binaries and gender queers and the huge amount of queerness you can have. I would say queers also generally clash with heteronormativity. And to some degree, like the patriarchal system, because like they kind of don't accept how society, for we come to that in a little bit, decided how humans should live together. So they challenge that and they clash to that to quite some point. And they do that by having like a very self-determined, active decision, like how their sexuality or like how their living is happening. I find it important to define queerness also to some degree less about sexual preference. That is the thing that like a couple of years ago I would strongly disagree with, but now I know a couple of gays or also lesbians who say they're like lesbian or gay, but like not queer. And what they mean is kind of like, well, they are somewhat fitting into like the patriarchal system. They're like not really clashing with it anymore because, well, gay, like being gay or being lesbian is not as much as an I don't know, outcast it was like 10 years ago or like 20 years ago, like it got more accepted. And then you have like some parts, I would say from within the scene that is kind of like rejecting the queerness. And for me, queerness is more like the challenging of sexuality and gender norms altogether. Like, what does it actually mean? Like, why do we live in this patriarchal system? How is it supposed to work? And it's more like a conscious thing. Like a conscious decision. For the next, I do want to talk about gaydar. I do not mean the website that some of you probably know because there's a gay dating website in the UK called gaydar. We come to that as well. I mean more like the ability or sometimes thought ability by queer people or gay people to see each other without actually knowing anything about it. So it's kind of like a sixth sense that you know, like, oh, this person, yeah, I see them, yeah, I know. And a lot about it, it's like kind of like subtle clothing hints, or like, oh, this is like, oh, this button is like a little bit too deep, or, well, sure, like I'm wearing a skirt that is very much not cis-hetero. But to some degree also like the way you look or like the way you interact with each other, like sometimes it's like the hands that you kind of, I don't know, I'm not sure why this is happening, but for a lot of gays, it is. And it's a little bit, to some degree, something I would call dog whistling, which is not really right because, well, dog whistling is originally when you call your dog with like a whistle that normal people shouldn't be able to hear because it's very high pitched. And the term dog whistling got adapted into like the political landscape when people speak about like very broad terms that like a lot of people can agree with and only like a few people understand what they mean. And I would say it is a little bit similar with the gay scene, not so much in like garnering support or like power or something, but it's like having kind of like signals that a lot of other people don't really notice. So the example that I'm having is, who now in this room has the urge to check their phone? I would say 98% of all gays know this sound, whether they still use it or not. It's like the notification sound of Grindr. And non-gays usually have no clue what that means. Like, they don't even notice what the fuck is that even happening. A couple of months ago, it got like a little bit more popular as it became like a TikTok trend, where you play the sound and then check the room, like who's actively checking the phone, and you kind of out them by that. Not a particularly good thing to do, but there's like kind of like the understanding of the scene. Like, you have signs that you only you understand. Yeah, that's like the dog whistling to your own community. And it is an important thing. Like, it is how you recognize your own people, how you connect to them, how you know where to go to, like where to feel safe, where to date. Yeah. And then there's like a thing, queers love codes. I'm claiming that. The example here is the hanky code. Who in this room knows what the hanky code is? Can you? Okay, that is a bit less than half, I would say. So the hanky code is a cruising practice. We come to cruising in a bit. Where you basically have like kind of bandanas or handkerchiefs, and originally you put them into your back pocket, and well, I'm like wearing a skirt, I can't really put it in. And different colors of the handkerchiefs have like different meaning. So the one we see here, like the green one, is the one saying that you're like a sex worker or like a hustler. If you have it in your left pocket, it means you're offering sex work. If you have it in your right back pocket, it means that you're looking for sex work. The white one we see is universal. It doesn't matter where you wear it. It just stands for you prefer safer sex, so like only with condoms, or sometimes even like no penetration whatsoever. The purple one, I didn't really know until like I've never seen that in reality. Apparently, it should be about piercings, whether you want to be pierced or not. I've never seen that in real life, but I found this picture and I quite liked it. And if you don't have like a back pocket, you usually take like this one is like dark blue, and you put it like around your wrist or sometimes even like around your neck, and then like depending on where you have the knot, it says whether you're like on the top side or on the bottom side. Or like also like with the light blue, or like the dark blue means generally penetration, like if you want to have anal sex. The light blue stands for blowjobs. And you always have a little bit the thing that like if you wear it on the left side, you're a top, and if you wear it on the right side, you're the bottom, or like you're the receiving part. And you have like a lot of codes that kind of like come from that. So like the colors are still the same, even if you wear like harnesses or something. Like if you see someone in like a dungeon with like a red harness, it usually means they're into fisting. If you don't know what fisting is, Google it or use some other word. I'm not going to go into there. Same with like just black harnesses. It usually means that you're generally into BDSM play. If it's a yellow harness, it usually means piss play. So you do have like a variety, and like these codes, even if like the hanky code isn't really in use anymore because we have like dating apps and stuff nowadays and cruising isn't happening as much, but the colors still very much active. Like you still see them at like lots of queer parties. Yeah. So let's go a little bit into the history of queerness and to some degree like the gay scene. I'm a little bit focused on the... Where am I? I'm here. I'm a little bit focusing on the gays because it feel like they were more the forefront, and to some degree it is also like the way gays have been discriminated is a little bit different from like lesbians, and a lot of non-binary and trans folks is to some degree a point that we it's kind of like a new development, and that sounds awful because no, they've been around forever, like we know that for like a long time, but we didn't have like a lot of words to that, and I do come to that like a little bit more on the sciencey part about it. But so the history of like the gay scene, we do have like a lot of cruising happening forever. Like we can go back to like ancient Rome and stuff, and we know that that happened. We see that like in the time of Shakespeare or like of, I don't know, like it was always a thing. And if you're thinking at cruising about like some cruise ship somewhere, like how is that connected to the gay scene? No, there's like a practice where you basically have sex in somewhat shady places like some forest or like some park, or nowadays, or like for a while, often like public toilets or something. You may not approve, but it is happening. It has been happening since the beginning of time. Also, with the gay scene or like the queer scene altogether, there's like a lot of sex work happening there, and it has been since ever. And I sometimes feel a bit like the scene is a little bit removing that because we don't want to have too much to do with that, a little bit like the cruising, like we don't really want to talk about it publicly. But it's like an important part, and it has been forever, as well, sex work is the oldest profession in the world. At some point, we got a little bit more liberal, and we got like the gay bars and like the dark rooms, and like we have more specific places where to meet and hook up. One of them was like the Stonewall Inn, or still is the Stonewall Inn, where the Stonewall riots happened in 1969. You probably know, all know of this. It was kind of like the big start of the new gay liberation. And well, the last part is kind of like the online dating that came to life to everyone, but also to the queers. Now let's talk a little bit about like stigma and shame, because stigma and shame is a big part of the scene. Of the scene, whether we want to or not. Erving Goffman, a sociologist, an American sociologist, wrote a couple of pieces about like stigma particularly, and he differentiated between visible and invisible stigma. So some people get stigmatized for like their skin color, and you can't really hide it, or like very bad. So you always have to deal with it. And something like being queer is something that you usually can hide pretty well. Like I don't have to wear heels and a skirt, and I can put like my hair away and don't wear fancy earrings, and then maybe people don't notice that I'm queer. Maybe they still do, but like I can try to hide it. Hiding your skin color is something you can't really do. And it has a little bit of difference, like your gender, you hardly can hide it too. So the difference in like how visible you are for whatever you get stigmatized is also like a response in how you can react to it. So if you can hide it, people tend to hide it. Like you can't really hide your skin color, so it has for a long time like a different approach. And that is one of the reasons why a lot of the queer scene was for a very long time very invisible, because you simply didn't see it, like they didn't show it. Now I've lost my point. So with the stigma and shame, for some people it is more important to not be outed than to be safe. Like going cruising into like some park and hooking up with someone you've never talked to, you don't know their name or anything, it can mean that you have great sex, but it also can mean that things really get ugly and you don't like it at all. And yet a lot of people prefer this to some degree because it is safe, because like you can't be outed, like your coworkers or your family or something doesn't know. So like some people choose the more dangerous approach over the possible being outed or like telling your family or anyone like where you go. And so there's like a lot of focus on anonymity. Like you often have no name, so like no personal info. Even like today with like online dating, that is still quite a lot of thing for a lot of people. Also like a lot of not showing their faces. It got less over the years, but it's still a thing for quite some people. But then with that, I also want to say like a lot of cruising to some degree also became a kink. Like some people, it isn't really about like, oh my God, I need to be really protected. For some people, it's just the kick itself. Like, oh my God, what's happening? Is anyone going to catch me? Like this is a thrill for some people. And then, well, with the internet, no one knows you're a dog. I kind of disagree with it by now to some degree, but back then it was like the cartoon was made in 1993. It was very much like the internet was kind of like the safe place. You can just like be whoever you are. Maybe that's also where the puppies were born. I don't think so. I do believe they were around longer than that. But yes, on the internet generally it's kind of like a safe thing, or like they believe it was. And then let's talk a little bit about like the sexual, on the sexual liberation. What does it actually mean? Well, there was like the sexual liberation and like the 1968 and 69 and like the Stonewall riots, and we talked a lot more like in the 70s about sexual liberation and like kind of like getting out of patriarchy. And what we see by now is that younger generations have less sex than older generations. And that is to some degree, why is that happening? Like, we are more liberal, so we can do more things. But we do see in science or like in statistics that younger people on average have less sex than previous generations. However, they also on average have more kinky sex. Like, they are more kinky. And they're also a lot more queer than previous generations. Like, no generation has been as queer as the young people today. One of the arguments that is often coming, a lot of it is like coming by porn, because we watch porn. So somebody's like, well, you can just like watch porn, so you don't really have to find anyone and like have sex with them anymore. You can just watch porn and masturbate and be happy about it. Often it is kind of like, oh my God, this is like so evil and so bad, and like it's making everyone kinky and everyone queer. And there is some point in it, because like porn is to a lot of people also like an entry way to just know what you actually want, or like to see that you're not alone with whatever is happening in your head or whatever's your fantasy. The science on porn is really complicated. Like, there is not a lot happened. There's a lot of opinion about porn, but there's like very little good science happening on it, to some degree also because academics are somewhat aware of porn, and there are like not many people researching it altogether. And then we have Michel Foucault, like the French philosopher, who wrote already, like he wrote a lot about sexuality and like what you can say about sexuality. And he had already like a point that sexuality becomes like more individualized. Like, people have more individual sexualities. And that was before the golden age of porn. Like, that was like in the 70s that he was like really active. So it's like to a little bit like we see some correlation, but we don't really know if there's actually like an actual cause between this. And as we are like the French philosopher Foucault, does any one of you know the Minitel? Yeah, some people. Impressive. I didn't until like a couple of days ago when I was researching a little bit more about the talk here. It was like basically a chat system in France, generated in 1980, and it was like shut down in 2012. However, the last couple of years, it was very little use, basically for like some fried things. And with the Minitel, we had the Minitel Rosé. It was like in the 80s, a very popular way to chat and like to do a lot of sexting. I do not know to what extent that was also queer. I was trying to research it, but as I just came across a Minitel a couple of days ago, I don't really know how much it was. However, there's like a mass murder happened like in 1991, where like a French guy was convicted after killing three gay people for meeting over Minitel for like BDSM sessions. So that did happen, and we know that Minitel was also used for like queerness. And I am mentioning it so much because Minitel was kind of like the first proper online dating. That is not completely true. There were like some online datings happening like already, or like some systems happening in Boston before, when the internet was done long before the web. But Minitel was like the first big one. And with that, we come a little bit more into like the online dating altogether. And like, how did it develop? The first proper online dating app or website was Match.com. And Match.com was like, originally the idea was like in 1993 and 1995 it became active. And it included from the very beginning like queer people. It had like from the very beginning to some degree like a focus on it. After that, the next gay sites, or like the next dating sites, there were like Gaydar. We mentioned that already, like in 1999. In 2002, there came Gay Romeo, by now only Romeo, a German dating site. In 2004, the Taz, a German newspaper, left-wing newspaper, talked about like the pink lists, claiming that the Gay Romeo website is so popular in Germany that basically all gays are on that website. So they talked about like the pink list that the Nazis had to search for like queers or gays were like reenacted on that website. So it was like really popular and to some degree still is. Then in 2004, there came also OkCupid. I guess a lot of people know this one. And my experience was always pretty nerdy and pretty technical. It got a lot less over the years, but like in the beginning, it was quite nerdy. In 2009, we had Grindr. We heard the sound already. Like it's, I would say, the prime gay dating app nowadays. And then, like in 2012, Tinder became a thing. And that is when I noticed, like, oh, actually, non-queer people are using online dating as well. So what I'm saying is that there's quite a time gap between when queers used online dating and when, like, the heterosexuals started with it as well. Okay, no, this doesn't work. So let's talk a little bit about heteronormativity. The idea about like, no, we need to start with marriage, which is, well, like a very heteronormative thing, like, well, a woman and a man come together and they love and marry each other. Historically speaking, this is not really true, as in they didn't marry for love. They were basically workmates, a little bit similar to what sometimes we nowadays, or like particularly in the US, I think, is called with like the work wife that you have, because like you work together. And back in the days, like we go back centuries, a marriage was basically like a union of people to care for each other when you're getting sick, like when you have children, like bringing up. It wasn't really anything about love. We have a lot of religion forming heteronormativity. Not all religions, but like a lot of them, particularly Christianity. Like kind of telling us like how we live, and there's like a point where where the very loyal approach and like the very you only have sex to make children was useful and smart, and that is before we had any kind of antibiotics, which means like, well, back in the days a lot of people got like some kind of STIs and you couldn't treat them, so like the idea about being very loyal to your partner made back in the time actually sense to save the population as its whole, because you could just like die of syphilis or anything. So I think like sometimes when we talk about heteronormativity or like heterosexuals or like this very strong focus on loyalty and monogamy, we kind of miss from what time this approach came. And back then it was like not super stupid that the religion was so strongly monogamous. By now it doesn't really make any sense anymore because you can treat all of it pretty easily. But back then it was like an actual thing. Yeah. And then, well, we did have like the Victorian age and like the Restoration. That was like when a lot of roles for people or like a lot of gender roles were like a lot stronger enforced than before. And the idea about like marriage is for love is basically like a Hollywood idea. Okay, we don't have as much time anymore. Basically done. There's like one thing like in the digital development. So let's talk about like why this one is so queer. San Francisco was like always kind of like the queer haven and the hippie haven before it became Silicon Valley. Innovation is needed or like always prescribed by social need. We can skip a little bit of it. So let's talk about the flip. There's like a British philosopher, Miranda Fricker, who coined the term epistemic injustice. What it means is that you need words to describe what you are. Or like what you experience. Her experience was sexual harassment. So before the term sexual harassment was coined, you couldn't really talk about it. And it is a bit the same with like a lot of queer people, because before you had words for like to describe, you couldn't really say what you were and you couldn't really find anyone. by now queerness is like a lot more accepted generally in the public. So coming back to the hacker scene, like where did the big flip come from? Why is now everyone queer? The hacker scene became like a safe space. So like first when I was like entering the hacker space, it didn't feel like a safe space, or like it didn't feel like a queer safe space. But when I kind of like came back and I was like, oh my God, there are a lot of queers and like the general acceptance is here. So the hacker events itself also became kind of like safe to just try out things and to figure out things. With that, I think we are kind of done. Important thing I missed. AIDS. One of the things we sometimes miss in the scene, or like when talking about it, is also that like a generation of queers, or particularly gays, is simply vanished. Like they don't live anymore. Like we don't have a lot of old people telling us how to do that, because there was the AIDS epidemic, to some degree still is, and just eradicated like a whole society. So that's to some degree also like why we, why the flip just happened, because now I feel like I'm the old one, because people are 30 years older than me, there aren't many queers, or like many gays particularly. The early internet, it was over average useful for queers. Basically, if you live like somewhere in the countryside, you want to find similar people than yourself. So when the internet was around, it was like a really good way to just find each other. Because the one bar you can't really go to, you're not sure if it's safe. And so if you're like more inclined to use it, you're also more inclined to get involved and develop it. So that's like one part why so many people end up here. And the late internet, like what we see nowadays, is a little bit the opposite. As in, first we kind of like made the internet for ourselves, and now we have a little bit like works for most, and often it doesn't really work for the queers anymore or for like specific groups. That is like a fundamental thing. It's not so much about like queerness. It's if some technology get adopted for like everyone, it does not mean that the specific groups are like always best met. And to quite some degree, I see that lately on the internet, like tech development altogether. You have like less niches that you can go to because a lot of regulation happened and you simply don't have the niches that we need. That means a little bit like, okay, we go to like Mastodon and stuff and have like their own websites or like try to find that. And to some degree, I noticed that it's like the queer scene is moving a little bit offline again. To some degree, it's like, well, we are meeting here. We are not just like in some stream or something. It is also like these events became more important, like the offline events. I mean, it's all streamed and everything. And sure, we are like all very digital. But it's also like the offline part becomes to some degree more of a safe space than online. And this video we're gonna skip because we don't really have time for that, but I guess most of you know this. If not, look for it. The internet is for porn. Was like an musical in New York. Contacts, if you do wanna contact me, there's like my email and my Mastodon account, also like some website. You can check out. Also, if you disagree with something, if you say like I don't know, missed a lot of things, just come to me to the Q&R tent. I'm not sure where exactly it is afterwards. And also come to me today, because I'm only here today. This is a little bit of an awful thing, but that was the only thing I could manage time-wise, because I have to leave tonight, sadly. And with that, thanks.